now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Sonia Zohar. Sonia Zohar is an empath and an anomalous researcher primarily focused on the being known as Sasquatch due to an encounter she had in Montana in 2012. Currently, she lives in Washington State, where she teaches primary education and in her spare time traverses unabated into the depths of the wilderness to observe, communicate, and habituate Sasquatch. She has worked with Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum, Dr. John Bindernagel, Les Stroud of Survivor Man, and Dr. Susan McDonald over the last 7 years and has experienced firsthand all purported Sasquatch phenomena. She's written a children's book, currently working on a non-fictional book on the topic, and speaks publicly when given the opportunity. So without any further ado, Sonia Zohar, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Good morning, James. Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
Likewise. The field of Sasquatch research has reached new horizons and has opened up new vistas to those with the eyes to see and the ears to hear. Yourself and your colleague, Mike Patterson, who I've had on the show, and others out there have done their level best to take this research into the next level where it needs to go. But before we get to that point, I'd like you to tell our audience a bit about yourself and how you got into Sasquatch work research and, you know, the milestones that led you to this point.
Well, it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey. I can't thank the journey and the process enough. But I didn't start out a believer. I actually didn't believe in Bigfoot. I thought Bigfoot was the jackalope of the Pacific Northwest. I thought it was something that, you know, a roadside kind of gig and gag and the people had a lot of fun with and made toys and dolls with. And then I was hiking in Lewis and Clark National Park around that area in the area of Montana. And something followed me for about 4 days. And something followed me that sounded like a gorilla. So I was open to the possibility that someone's designer gorilla had gotten loose in the forest and was following me. However, you know, I say that in jokingly because there were a couple of things that happened from that very first encounter that I knew that it was different, whatever it was. But I will say it did sound like a gorilla. It made noises, vocalizations, similar to a gorilla. It was large. It followed me. I never actually saw it. But it made noises, broke sticks around me, and then it actually vocalized in a very gorilla-like sounding vocalization. And the odd thing about it, I knew from the beginning that what I was experiencing was different because when I left, I had my very first what I'd call Sasquatch encounter of the phenomena. And one of the phenomena that you encounter when you encounter Sasquatch are what they call out of context emotions. And I knew that as I was driving away from the campsite, I started to feel this unbearable sadness and it was consuming. And, you know, and I'm privy to my own emotions. I'm not like, I won't hide my tears or anything like that. I don't care. You know, you have your emotion, you have emotion, but this was so consuming and so out of context that I would feel this great sense of sadness that I was leaving that I stood up and took notice going, this is not me. I don't know why I'm feeling like this. I actually logically don't feel like this, but yet all of the emotions in my body are just devastated that I'm leaving. And that stuck with me from the very first time. And that's another thing that is Sasquatch phenomena. Once you are interacting with this being, the feelings that you have when you interact with it don't leave you. So it's almost like a traumatic experience where there's one thing to be in, have an experience in your life that's very memorable and you can remember the sounds and this and you can retell the story. But usually when I have a Sasquatch experience, I don't really just retell the story. I relive the experience in my body. The cells, even talking about the experience, the very first experience in 2012 in Montana, my heart starts to feel it. I feel that emotion. So that's one of the Sasquatch phenomena. So you go into the forest, you have this encounter, and it's not like you're just telling your friends, you actually relive it, every part of it. If it's fear, if it's anxiety, if it's happiness or joy. But I'll mostly say that other people that have the experience, for the most part, when they're retelling the story, is it's fear. They become really afraid. And I really understand why they become afraid, because it's not every day you're in the forest and all of a sudden you know you're being surrounded by a being that has all the power for all intents and purposes, right? You know, I could liken it to the experience of maybe being in the ocean doing some diving and all of a sudden you're surrounded by sharks. But I'm not saying that Sasquatch are like that, predatory. But I can imagine all of a sudden when you're in that water and you realize that you're not in control anymore. You don't have the power. What's swimming around you has the power. And so the Sasquatch experience is likened to that. Like when you're in it, you're like, I'm not calling the shots here. And I think for someone who's been like a lifelong hunter, that would be very terrifying. And so that's why I think a lot of people that have the experience come away just terrified. And I've had that experience before. I have had the experience of being terrified, but mostly it's kind of hit or miss. But you do realize when you're in the forest with them that you're not the human that you think you are. Or we have this idea that we're the apex predator in the forest. And then you soon learn that, oh no, I'm not alone in this forest. I'm not alone.
Could you tell us a bit about that first encounter in 2012 and, you know, the thought process, the emotions, and then you mentioned afterwards that it seemed to follow you, and that's how this whole thing started.
Well, and that's another Sasquatch phenomenon. And that's one thing, you know, again, when you really talk to researchers, even if the researchers say that they are looking, they believe it's a biological being and solely biological, no woo-woo stuff about it, no phenomena. When you get them alone in private, they'll tell you, well, you know, this thing happened, and they don't want to admit it. And it's okay, because our society is not the hotbed for admitting paranormal experiences. We're on the fringe when you do that, when you finally fess up to that. So Montana, I actually went with the intention. I had this idea in 2007 when I watched a program with Jimmy Chilcutt, and he said he had dermal ridges and that these casts that they were taking actually concluded for him, who was a fingerprint expert, that when they had the cast and they got the fine lines, he said without a doubt that there was a non-human bipedal primate in North America. Well, when I heard that, and this was a scientific evidence for, you know, this, something in me shifted. The minute I heard that, I coming from an anthropological view, really from a scientific view, I was like scratching my head saying, you mean this idea, this like Bigfoot thing is real? Like it's possible there's a non-human bipedal primate in North America? And so something in my whole essence shifted, and I did all of this theoretical research. So I went to Montana with the intention to see. And how that came about was there was a gentleman there. It was his territory. His name's Albert Foos. And he had been having these purported interactions for years. And then all of a sudden it went silent. And so he had contacted a colleague of mine at that time saying, hey, I don't know what's going on with my site. Maybe you can figure something out. He called this Bigfoot expert out to come to his territory. I had in that time, I had been bugging this gentleman to take me out, because I knew right away that once I got the theoretical research under my tabs and had an idea, I knew that all the research is in the field. You got to be in the field now. You just can't sit there and look at books. You got to get out there and you've got to communicate. And so I'd been bugging this gentleman to take me out. And he took me up on it. He said, okay, I'm going to Montana. I'm going to go inspect this site, find out why these beings aren't communicating, see what I can see, come out with me. If you're all that and you think you can contact them and you can talk to them and you're going to have an experience, come on, let's see what you can do. And so I went out with the intention, but even when I went, James, when I went to Montana, I still wasn't a believer necessarily. It's a hard thing to believe, especially from my vantage point. Diane Fossey and Jane Goodall were my heroes, you know? So, you know, Gorillas in the Mist, Jane Goodall, and, you know, I really had this mindset, this belief system that all of our larger order apes and primates existed in Africa and Asia, not in North America. So it was a big chunk for me to take in. When I went to Montana, I was still like, okay, let me see this. Like, let me see this evidence before I actually believe. Well, the first night I was there, something hit our trailer. Something hit my trailer, actually. I had my own private trailer, and something at 11:30 at night, a rock hit the trailer pretty loudly. And I really thought my colleague might have been playing with me. And that's when I learned the first rule of Bigfoot research, right? The one thing he did say to me that stuck, you know, there were a couple of things he said to me that really landed with me. And that was, you can't joke out here. We don't joke each other about anything. We don't pull pranks, because what we're doing is so, the finesse is so, you know, you're dealing with these physical evidences and you're dealing with this, a very elusive creature. So if I joke you, I can't trust you. And if you joke me, we can't trust each other. So the first rule about being in field research is you don't pull pranks on each other. And I got that. I was like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So the next night around 11:30, boom, something hit my trailer. I thought, that's interesting. And then the whole 7 days or 10 days that I was in Montana, something around that time did come around my trailer. However, what we were doing was, the colleague that I was with was what I call an ape chaser. He believes Sasquatch is 100% a biological being. We would go out in the day and do all of this hiking around Lewis and Clark National Park, and then we'd come back to our base camp and hope that this being would follow. We really didn't have anything happen for the first 4 days. I mean, nothing. It was kind of disappointing. I did find what I thought could be a track, and that was really fascinating. I still wasn't a believer. I was still toying with the idea. Then the Thursday night before I had to leave Saturday morning, even though we'd had some things happen at night around the trailer, for me, nothing really conclusive. I mean, a rock hitting the trailer, I don't know. Something hitting the trailer still wasn't enough at all for me. We did have something, there was an open range where we were staying, so there were cattle, and that's pretty much all that was out there. There was the national park and then these open range cattle ranches, no humans for miles, and not even a cell phone signal. And one night we did have something push the cattle through. It was very odd. It was very unusual, and my colleague said it was a Bigfoot. You know, I still didn't really believe that. He heard some strange calls. I heard the calls too, but, you know, there were cougars out there. I heard cougars in the night, so, you know, I'm still kind of on the fence about it. But when the cattle walked through the campground, it was very bizarre because they walked right past the fire, and I don't know how many animals, open range cattle, were spooked enough that they would come into our camp and walk right past the fire. Nevertheless, I still, whatever. So Thursday night, it was the last Thursday where we'd been hiking all day, and we were sitting there at this big open meadow. And in the meadow, across, way, way across in the corner where the sun was setting, there was these cow elk, and it was so far away, like they're only this big, and I'm watching them, and we were watching them come out into the field as the sun came down. And then right where they were coming out from was this very, very large crack sound. And I looked up at my colleague and he said, oh, that's probably a bull elk. Sometimes they break branches. They'll hit their horns against the trees. It's a bull elk. And I'm like, oh, okay. Then a few minutes later, crack. And I'm like, he looks at me and he's like, yeah, that's still a bull elk. And then pretty much perpendicular from where we were now, another crack, really loud. And then his eyebrows raised and he looked at me. He said, Sonia, he goes, nothing moves through the forest that fast. We're going to have an encounter. Are you ready? That's a Sasquatch. And I'm like, all I know is I'm hearing these loud cracks in the forest. Like, okay, whatever, sir. And then right behind us, I mean, right behind us, crack. And he goes, can you confront? And now that was very interesting for me because, again, I'm still not really a believer. I don't know what I'm confronting. I don't know what's around us. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. But I walk to the tree line and I start talking. And I'm like, hello? Is somebody in there? Who are you? You know, because you bought the ticket, take the ride. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just talking. And I'm like, hello? And there was no sounds. And then he and I had this interesting conversation. Like I said, he was an ape chaser. He believes in a biological being. And one of the things I had been doing, he had asked me to do, and I would do, I would go to the bathroom in several places in the forest, you know, and leave a scent trail. And that's what I was doing. I would leave a scent trail. So I'd leave a bathroom, and then I would actually touch trees and rub my hands along things to leave a scent trail back to our base camp. So he asked me to go to the bathroom again, and let's go. The sun was coming down. Hindsight now, my colleague at the time had enough experience to where he was actually pretty afraid of them. Bottom line, he was terrified by them. And I didn't know this. And I was very naive. You know, I was very naive to this whole thing. I didn't know what to expect. Like I said, I was still looking for Gigantopithecus. And I started speaking into the forest. He asked me to go to the bathroom. We decided to go back to the ATV where the ATV was parked. There was no follow-up sounds. He pointed to this area where there was a circle of trees growing. And he said, go in there and go to the bathroom. I'm like, oh, no, no, no. I go, that's a... And I made this kind of offhand quirky joke. I was like, oh, no, that's a fairy ring. I can't go to the bathroom there. Because he was very... His personality is very dry. And anyway, and so... he said, what is that? And we had this conversation about it. And I just kind of gave up. And I said, well, I'm going over here, but I won't go there. I'll go. He's like, go wherever you need to go and let's go. So we go back to the ATV. Now this is where it gets interesting. We got back to the ATV. I had this strange sense about the ATV. It was like when you walk into your home maybe, or get to your car and you know you left something on your seat, but it's not there, or you didn't leave your door open. And you have this strange feeling that something's different. And I even asked him, I said, is something missing from the ATV? Because I feel like somebody's been here. And he looks at the ATV and goes, no, I don't know what you're talking about. And I go, I just have this strange sense. And I walked around the ATV and looked at it and looked in the area. We got on the ATV, and then across the way from us in the tree line, crack. And now I was excited. I was like, okay, game on. So I went back into the forest and I started talking. And I'm like, hello, are you there? Crack. Who are you? Where are you? Crack. And then it started making this noise. And I don't know if you know, but I'm going to make it with my mouth so you hear the sound. This is exactly the sound. Like that, that pop. But really what it was is when a silverback gorilla wants to move his troop, right? He decides he's going to move. He pops his chest. And that's the sound I heard. And I knew that sound. And I was like, hello? Where are you? Come out. And these noises and these pops and these cracks started happening. My colleague was going crazy because he had never, ever before that heard someone talk and have a response. Like, are you there? Pop. Are you, where are you? Crack. What I had noticed as I was following these sounds and they were leading me deeper in the forest. However, they were also leading me away from my colleague. And I started to notice that there was this distance, and I did have some idea of safety because I don't know what I'm dealing with. Again, I'm still not really even a believer of what's going on. And, I sat down. I finally just sat down and said, no, I'm not going any farther. You need to come out now. Like, I've been listening to you and I've been following you, but you need to come out. And I sat on a log and nothing happened. It felt, in all honesty, it just felt like the wind went out of the experience too. Like it was just gone. And I looked back at my colleague and we were really excited. He was excited. He was also getting very nervous because now we're beyond sunset. We're at dusk and he doesn't want to be out there at dark. And so we got on the ATV and went back to the base camp. And that was the night that something pushed the cattle through the camp. Again, he said it was Bigfoot. I'm still not a believer. I haven't had my firsthand encounter yet. I don't even know what I'm experiencing. We go out the next day. We're very excited. I'm excited too. I'm thrilled. I don't know what's going on. I'm just so excited. We go back to the same spot. And right away, we get right there. I start calling to it, crack, pop. I'm thrilled. I'm elated. I start following the sounds back, farther, farther. And as I'm walking, I was led to a circle of trees. Now, my colleague didn't notice that, but I did. I was like, do you know what I am standing in right now? I go, I'm standing in a fairy circle. And again, it wasn't impressive to my colleague, but I noticed that, like, whoa, yesterday just continued. And something had an awareness of our conversation. Again, I just kind of store that information. I'm still trying to figure out what's going on. I'm listening and popping and cracking. And then it happened again to where I get to a certain position and I realize there's this distance between my colleague and I. And I don't think it's safe necessarily. And so I make the same demand. It's time for you to come forward now. You need to come forward. I'm not going back any farther. And same thing again. Gone. All the energy gone. No noises. The forest is silent. So I go back to the ATV where my partner is, and we start talking. We start to maybe nibble on some food, and then I realize, you know, look, the bottom line is whatever it is wants us to go back in there. So let's just go. Let's just go. And so we did. We went hiking. We hiked way back into the back of that forest for several hours. We got to a creek. We sat down. We chatted for a bit. Nothing happened. There was nothing strange, no phenomena. At one point in our conversation, though, we both did this one thing, which was very interesting. We both sat up and turned and looked. And then we looked at each other. And we didn't know why we did that. But again, nothing came forward. I spoke. I talked to it. Are you there? What's there? We hadn't even heard anything. It was very interesting. We both just sat up and went and looked. But again, that's not even a big deal, right? So we packed our stuff up. We head back out to the ATV. And this is another phenomena, is that they follow you out. I would learn this later. They follow you out. And when we got back to the ATV, it started making noise again. And now I'm just thrilled. I'm like thrilled. I'm so excited. And I completely lose any connection to my partner. I grabbed an apple. I run back into the forest. I'd been eating an apple. I run back into the forest. And I'm like, look, I have to leave now because I had a plane out the next morning. And again, I'm new to this, so I'm not even getting the extent of what's happening because I'm still quite not a believer. And anyway, and I haven't seen anything to make me believe that I'm dealing with Sasquatch. I don't know what I'm dealing with, quite honestly, but something is talking to me through pops and cracks and noises. And so I run back out to the forest. And then I ask it for something. And I did that right away. That was one thing that my intuition did, is I would ask for an interaction. Like, are you still there? Let me hear you. Pop. Okay, you're there. So this time with the apple, I showed it that you could eat the apple. This apple is good. You can eat it. And then I had this other one. And I'm like, where do you want me to put it? I'm leaving this for you. This is a gift. Where do you want it? Forest goes silent. And then all of a sudden, about, I would say 50 yards away from me over to my left, but deeper into the woods, I see these three trees start moving. Now, again, I have no proof of anything, but I just asked for a phenomena. I asked for something and something happened. So I just went on tuition. I ran to where the three trees were and I stood there and talked to it and not much happened. And then I just took the apple up and because I had to leave, and I explained to whatever I was interacting, I have to leave. I go, this gift is for you. And I find, you know, a little stubby on the tree and I stake it up really high. This is for you. I got to go. And I leave the apple and I keep eating mine and I'm kind of talking. And then all of a sudden from my right, I hear this really amazing, long, I can't do it, I'll give you a little example, grovelly growl, but not a growl that was intimidating. It was, but the thing about it was, is it was punctuated with a question mark. It was not just, it was, and because the sound filled the whole area. I had lost, like I said, connection to my partner. And I immediately turned to him and I screamed at him, are you messing with me? But I didn't use the M word. I used the adult version of that word. I was like, are you messing with me? Because I didn't. And he stood up, his hands, he had a gun in his hand. He's like, I'm right here. keep talking. And so I turned and I kept talking. And I'm like, where are you? Come out. Come out. Talk to me. I don't see you. Where are you? I want to see you. I came all this way to meet you. I'm right here. And it made the sound again. It made this long, grovelly growl punctuated with a question mark. But it wouldn't come out. I couldn't see it. Well, later would tell me that it was probably standing right in front of me, given their ability to blend. It was probably standing right in front of me. But it made the sound, nothing happened. And again, now we're at sunset and I do have to go. I have to pack up. I have to, you know, fly out. I've got a 2-hour drive before I have, or at least like almost like a 6-hour drive or something like this, amazing drive. And we still have to break down the camp and I have to fly out the next morning to California. So I said my goodbyes and got back on the ATV. And that's when I knew, like, we started to pull away. And then I just had this like unbelievable sadness. And I remember looking over my shoulder back to where I'd had the encounter. And I knew, like right then, that I was having a shared experience, that these were just not my feelings. Something over there was having the feeling, and I was sharing this really deep sadness about me leaving. And, you know, as I tell this story too, I still feel it. And every time I tell this story, I want to go back. I need to go back. You know, I need to go back to that area and reconnect. However, when I got home back to California, something that I haven't really shared with a lot of people is I started having activity around my home. Without a doubt.
And tell us a bit about your home. Were you in an urban setting or were you near the woods?
I was near the woods. I was in California and in a place called Sebastopol. And Sebastopol is 50 minutes north of San Francisco. And I had 5 acres that bordered a wildlife corridor that was environmentally protected, because they also had some vegetation on that area that didn't grow anywhere else in the world. So there was some marsh territory, and that wildlife corridor could go all the way out to Bodega Bay and then all the way up to the Redwoods. And then I had just this influx of wildlife always coming through my property to get to the rural areas, like the deer and, you know, the fox and all the rural animals that actually have grown to like a human area for food and shelter. So I had all kinds of animals. I had wild turkey, I had deer, I had possum, I had fox, I had cougar, I had coyote. So yeah, there was a wildlife corridor, so very easily something could come that way. But I still wouldn't expect that. You know, I had no expectation that whatsoever. But what would start happening is, and as we know, they're tricksters. They like to play tricks. And what I noticed is they really like to play with the things that I was personally dealing with. Like, things would happen around my chicken coop. Things would happen around my garden. Things would happen mostly at my wood pile, where I would cut wood, because I had a wood stove, and I cut wood. You know, I'd always have wood out there that I was, you know, making kindling for and whatnot. Even to the extent, like, one day I came out and my chopping block, which was this huge, big piece of redwood, this redwood stump that I couldn't put my hands around, right? Let alone lift it. I couldn't lift that thing. I mean, I could roll it, throw it over and roll it, but I couldn't just pick it up. One day I came out and my chopping block was on top of my wood stack. Now, who would do that? My neighbors, there's nobody in my house taking that wood doing stuff like that. So these things would start to happen, and I would just notice them and I would just kind of laugh. But the most beautiful thing that happened, and I'll show you. Matter of fact, my favorite piece of evidence, my absolute favorite. So one of the things I started doing was leaving gifts, like everybody does. We leave gifts. And I chose really early on not to do food and not to do anything plasticky or gimmicky. I really had decided that any forest dweller, well, first of all, I want to leave no trace, right? I wouldn't want to leave something plastic in the forest, right? And I decided right away to leave crystals, polished stones, because a stone is something of nature, but something polished would be interesting, I would think, right? And so that's what I first chose. And I left crystals in Canada and they would be taken. And Mike and I had experience with crystals. I left crystals when I was in Canada, and the crystal that I specifically left hidden, and Mike didn't even know I had done that. After we had camped at this place, I had left this crystal, and we got home, that crystal was in his camera bag and I had hidden it in the bush.
This is Mike Patterson you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah. I was blown away. He goes, "Did you put this here?" And I'm like, "Is this yours?" I'm like, I left that in the bushes. Anyway, so my favorite story though is this. I had left this crystal in the crook of a tree for 6 weeks. And it's a polished mineral called tiger iron. And nothing had really happened. I left it there for 6 weeks. And I'd go back and check. It was in a tree in that wildlife corridor where nobody ever was. Like, I'd never seen a human out there in the 5 years that I'd ever lived there. I was the only human I'd ever seen out there, because the wildlife corridor was bounded by other people's properties, private property. There was no way to get to it. So I'd left this in the crook of a tree for 6 weeks. Nothing happened. It would maybe turn over or turn a different direction. However, we all know that a raccoon or a squirrel or a raven could have played with this. It is shiny. It is pretty. But I left it there for 6 weeks. And then after 6 weeks, I just brought it home. I thought, oh, well, they're not interested, or they didn't see it, or nobody cares, or no big deal. And when I woke the next morning, this was on my doorstep of my home. This is a naturally occurring rock, and I've had a geologist look at it, and you can see they are almost identical. this is naturally occurring. It's so old. This rock is so old. If I broke it open, the geologist told me that it's like a geode, and the inside is nothing but sand. She Wow. says the stone is just ancient, ancient, and it's lava in origin. So. Yeah.
That is a remarkable story.
Isn't that wonderful? And what's so funny is that's, there's this theme about me and the heart, because, you know, when I heard about Bigfoot and I realized that it could possibly be true, the first place it landed was in my heart. Like, are you kidding me? Like, really? We have this big, huge bipedal non-human primate in North America? Like, oh my God. And so I have this relationship with hearts, and I've left them hearts before in different scenarios. So this was just, I mean, it's just the most beautiful thing. Anyway, I've heard all kinds of things. I think I've heard vocalizations that are wild and crazy and scary, and then I've actually heard vocalizations that are beautiful. Non-human origin, too big to, like, in the forest in the middle of the night, so big it's not a human and nobody's out there with their, you know, sounds I can't even explain. So I didn't want to say that it was human content. It really wasn't. I know it wasn't. But that one is my favorite piece of evidence. But I have others. So the heart story, when I was in Canada, I was with Randy Brisson, who does amazing work. And he is he's Lakota, and he's very close to his roots and his indigenous roots. He's very, very involved in his community. And he's been communicating with a group for years. That's all he does. And he doesn't post things, and he doesn't really talk because he feels the same way I do. There's so much criticism, and somehow some like BFOR people in Canada had pointed him out as a hoaxer, which is absolutely not true.
Randy will always be welcome here. I mean, anyone that you regard as being the real deal is always got a friend here at the Cosmic Switchboard Show. So if you can just let them know that.
Well, Randy and I have done some wonderful research. Thank you. I'll have him come. But he's also a little bit shy to talk about it because of his heritage, and their people do, his culture does have a relationship with them. They have a relationship. They've had a relationship for centuries with them.
Later on, I have a quick Lakota story. I don't want to interrupt you, but it involved me. So, but please continue.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you know, that's their culture. Matter of fact, the first gentleman I spoke with about this was in California, was also Lakota. And I had had a dream when I came back from Montana. And I don't want to share the dream here, not publicly. But he told me right away when I told him the dream, he set out, he goes, yes, they are communicating with you. And this is what this means. And this is what this means. And he had shared some things with me about how their community, basically the Sasquatch would come in at night and watch their rituals, you know, and be present with their nightly dances and prayers. And so he said they had a long-standing relationship with him, and Randy goes out, and Randy has some of the best evidence you've ever seen, ever. Anyway, I'll let you connect with him, but go ahead, please tell me your story.
Just a quick story. I'll share you a dream I had. Well, I'm not going to share it here, but it dealt with the Lakota elders also. And but the quick Lakota story was, I had a book on my shelf for a long time about Leonard Peltier and how he was railroaded, framed by the feds. And, you know, he's still doing, as far as I know, if he's still alive, doing hard time in a federal pen. And for those who don't know the story, you know, the Lakota at Pine Ridge and other reservations were getting a lot of harassment from the feds. And it degenerated into a shootout situation. Federal officer was shot, wounded, killed. I can't remember the exact story. Leonard Peltier was a Lakota who was basically framed and, you know, thrown into a federal penitentiary. And I kept getting prompted to read that book, but I couldn't bring myself to read it because I didn't want to go through the emotional, you know, upheaval of reading how this guy was railroaded and you know, stuffed up by a kangaroo court. Finally, the promptings, the spiritual promptings were so intense. Okay, I gave in. I read the book, right? And mm-hmm. I'm reading the opening chapter. And for some reason, the author was saying that he kept visiting these, not just Lakota reservations, but other Native American reservations throughout the Southwest too. Mm-hmm. And they kept telling him the big hairy man is coming back. Everywhere he'd go, these Native American elders would tell him there's been sightings of the big hairy man. He's here to tell us something. Something is coming, right? And I'm thinking, this is interesting. I resisted reading this book because I didn't want to read about the you know, travesty of justice. But the first chapter, the foreword, is about Sasquatch, right? So long story short, I read that. And then that night, I'm laying in bed, and I felt the presence in the bedroom. And I knew intuitively that there was a Sasquatch invisible in my bedroom, and it had to do with me reading that book, right, about what had happened to Leonard Peltier and the foreword to it, right? So I thought that was remarkable. I related the story to Mike Patterson. So anyhow, that's the extent of that. But then I'll tell you in the break about my Lakota dream. Didn't really have anything to do with Sasquatch, but I think it may be connected. Oh, and one other thing that happened yesterday, just yesterday. I had no idea there were deer in my part of Australia, and I have to do research on this. But we were driving over to get some ice cream by a beach resort, right? Because we had dinner. Mm-hmm. Oh, let's get some ice cream. And a deer cut right in front of our car, scared the hell out of us, right? And I'm thinking, deer? I mean, I've seen, like, wallabies, which are kind of small kangaroos. I've seen, you know, other things, but never a deer. I didn't know there were deer around here. And then you're telling me all these stories about animal crossings and cattle being driven, and I'm thinking, I don't know. It could just be a coincidence. But anyhow, that's my little story. I don't want to detract from your interview. So please.
Okay.
You know, in the time we got left, and this has been a fascinating segment, Sonia, and not to marginalize the efforts of the individual you went out to into the Montana Badlands with to do that initial research, because, you know, okay, he's an ape chaser, but there's a time and a place for that, right? But, and I'd like your thoughts on it, Ben, hindsight being 2020 and all that. Do you feel at some level that the Sasquatch there were reaching out to you in particular? Because one of my friends that I've had on the show, Ginger Lockwood, she was likewise a Sasquatch skeptic. She moved into a property in Georgia where there just happened to be a Sasquatch tribe living nearby. And suddenly she was having Sasquatch left, right, and center, and they're leaving like these tree stick structures in her yard, and she started mm-hmm. having all this paranormal stuff going on. And small sample size to be sure, but it seems to me with certain people that Sasquatch has developed a relationship with, I don't want to use the word chosen, I don't want to make it sound like an elitist kind of thing, but do you feel at some level that, okay, now we know about your colleague you're out in the bush with the field with, it's really you we're interested in? And again, I don't want to paint it in an elitist stratified sense, but what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, no, I'll say an elitist stratified sense. I'm okay with that. I mean, not really, like, but more in this sense, they choose you, you don't choose them. And that's what I really feel, because I really do believe this, because I went into the forest with the idea that they were apes, they were Gigantopithecus, right? Like, that's what I believe they were. I'm like, oh, Gigantopithecus did not go extinct. That's what we're dealing with. Because we have them in a biological record, right? We have skeletons. We have a fossil record for Gigantopithecus. So it is the logical assumption, right? And so, but I really feel like that first encounter, they showed up to me as an ape because that's what I believed them to be, right? My mindset was they're an ape. And so my filter kept me from actually experiencing them as they are because I already had an idea of who they were. And I really think that the mindset that you go into the forest to will alter your experience in that forest. And obviously, I have no evidence to back that, but that is my feeling about that. I feel now, hindsight, after all these years, that the Sasquatch showed up not only because of my energy as an animal lover and my expectation and my hope to have that experience, but I also feel they showed up to protect me. I have no doubt about that. But I really do feel like, and it's not really... I say that word elitist kind of joking, but they do, they choose you. They don't have to make themselves known. You know what I mean? Like, they're smart, they're intelligent, they're capable. They're, you know, from what I can tell, moderately omniscient. They must have a higher vantage point. So, well, they do have a higher vantage point, but here's where I'm a little bit different. I don't really believe anything is necessary paranormal. I don't like that term because
it's so limiting. I don't like it either.
Well, and what it does is it takes us out of the game of scientific research or any, once you start seeing, so once our culture starts saying paranormal, then you already get delegated to fringe. But if I could take all the criteria, let's say something like an octopus was as an elusive creature as a Sasquatch, and I started listing all the qualities that an octopus has, people would start thinking it was paranormal, right? An octopus can shapeshift. We know this. We have octopus that not only camouflage 100% that you can't see them, we also have octopus that change their body shape. Like, completely changes its body shape so it looks like a different animal, right? So I would rather say, let's study the phenomena that is actually natural, because if I listed off that criteria to an octopus, like let's say 100 years ago, they wouldn't say that being existed. If I said there was a creature that had 8 brains, 3 hearts, blue blood, and could look like a lionfish, they're like, what? You know what I mean? You know what I'm kind of saying? So, and Mike and I have this dispute all the time because what I want to do is take this body of evidence we call paranormal and start dropping it into the natural world, because it is naturally what we are experiencing. So Sasquatch have this ability to be sort of omniscient. If they're omniscient, then they have a higher vantage point. And I'll give you an example. If I'm looking at a fish in a pond, right? And the fish has no cognizance of me because of it's trapped by its environment, and I throw a rock into the pond, and the fish swims somewhere else, and I throw another rock at it, it's because of my vantage point. And that vantage point to the fish may seem omniscient and paranormal, but it's not. It's not at all. It's just because I have a different vantage point. The Sasquatch have a different vantage point that I can't understand because I am not privy to their existence. So I would venture to say that they exist in a realm much like I exist in a realm to a fish that it cannot know. I can visit the ocean, but I can't live in the ocean. Just like a Sasquatch can visit our forest, but it doesn't live in our forest. Perhaps. It's the same kind of thing. There's something that the Sasquatch are privy to that we, but our biological structure as a human is not privy to. And just because we're not privy to it doesn't mean that the encounter and the interactions are paranormal. It's just the term we like to use because we can't explain it. And science is afraid of it, right? And it's not science that's afraid of it. To tell you the truth, it's got to be religion that's afraid of it, right? It's religion that doesn't want us to know that we have an angelic-like omniscient being that lives right next to us. Because once we start accepting all of these things that the Bible doesn't really account for, then all of a sudden all the Bible power structure leaves. And science they parlay to each other, right? Once you start saying it, there's a great TV show, and I've used this soundbite before, but there's a show that was on the History Channel for Sasquatch, and there were some great scientists on there, like five or six scientists. One was Jeffrey Meldrum, and the other was Ian Redman. Now, Ian Redman believes in Sasquatch, 100%. Nevertheless, the premise for the show, all the scientists agreed. They said this one thing. They said, before we begin our talk, we have to agree that whatever we're researching has to be in the biological record. But that's not science, right? Because let's say 100 years ago, if I said octopus had 8 brains, I don't think anybody would believe that. That's a newfound fact that we're not really necessarily like, wow, 8 brains? Like, what has 8 brains? We don't have anything that has 8 brains. And now scientists are discovering about octopus, which is very interesting. And I don't know if you know this, but they're starting to say that the octopi are truly an alien species because their DNA is not like other animals on this planet. So they think maybe octopi could have come from somewhere else somewhere because their DNA is not matching with ours. So point being is that we have this phenomena that they're doing, but it really only seems like paranormal phenomena because we're trying to put it in this shoebox of what we know and what we believe. We can't do that. I don't know of any creature that was watching me that would put this. And even if you want to say there's human interaction, I'll invite any human to go out and find this rock. Please, like really go out and find this rock, right? So, but again, the term paranormal for me doesn't work. I just think there's all this stuff in our experience and we have a big body of information about how human works, and we have a body of information how octopus work, but we don't have the body information of what Sasquatch and UFOs, we don't have the body of information of how they work. So we call it paranormal, and the people that have the experience, we call them fringe. And that the powers of be, political, academic, and religious powers actually don't want this information out. They don't. For whatever reason, I can't imagine why. I mean, I think it's an amazing world. Why would we not want to know everything that's going on around us?
And to put it into perspective, Sonia, we know from our human experience, although still relegated to fringe by the mainstream, we have the well-documented feats of yogis, of shamans, of medicine men, medicine women. I've had friends that took part in Sweat Lodge in the Lakota Reservation, and they've seen some powerful medicine with their own eyes, right, inside those sweat lodges. So when they try to pigeonhole all this stuff, and it's interesting that you should bring up religion too, Sonia, because science, modern science as we understand it today, what's taught in the schools, is very much a religion with its own dogmas and its own intolerance and its own exclusiveness, mm-hmm. if you will. Now, in the time we got left, and we're just getting started, folks, because I want to find out more about the metaphysical aspects of this. In the Aboriginal culture in Australia, there are strict rules about tribes entering into other tribes' territory. And a lot in the old days, they would carry a certain stick that would be kind of like a diplomatic pass, allow them to pass through territory and whatnot. And although this delves into the woo-woo, the Aboriginals still are very telepathic and very psychic. So they would send out this message to all these tribes' territories that they're going to pass through. Look, I'm coming through. I'm on a mission, yada, yada. Right. Did it seem to you that it was the same clan or tribe of Sasquatch in Montana, or did they somehow liaise with the tribes in the Sebastopol area to present you with that stone? Or is there some kind of intermingling because my friend Ginger Lockwood tells me a story. She's the gal in Georgia. She developed a relationship with one of the Sasquatch. She called him Peanut because, he'd throw pebbles or whatever, and she'd throw peanuts out, out in the darkness. And then she went to California, clear from Georgia to California, to go squatching with her California friends. And in a deep Sasquatch footprint in the snow, there was a peanut, right? So she goes, this must be from Peanut, because I'm always throwing them peanuts in the Georgia woods, right? So what are your thoughts on that as far as, they literally followed you, but which tribe do you think it is? Do you think that there's some kind of coalition going on with alliances, if you will?
I really can't speak to that. I can just speak to my experience. What I do know is this. The being that I dealt with in Montana could be the same being that followed me home. That I'm open to. It may be. But you get a sense, or I get a sense, that they're very different. Like, I know for a fact, two of the troops, let's for better words, a tribe, right, that Randy is dealing with were very distinct. They were very distinct. I don't know how they communicate. I could speculate on that. And I love that you just shared with me, the telepathic thing. And we know that had to have been going on because ancient cultures communicated all the time. And they're much more earth-oriented. And, speaking to the religion and the educational cult, you guys know it more than anybody. You're in Australia. And, the form of terrorism that the Catholic Church did with the help of the Australian government to the Aboriginals in Australia is beyond. They had an intentional breed out the Aboriginal program. You can't get more terrorism than that. Stealing their children and breeding them out. They had a program, and it was from the Catholic Church. Breed them out. So they would take the children and rape them and impregnate them with white babies. So anyway, that's not a very good subject for me. Who knows what our ancient cultures were really doing and what was really available to them. But yeah, that telepathic communication, there had to have been some form of communication. And I think you might be aware that even the Egyptians came to Australia and were in cahoots with the Aboriginal leaders. The Aboriginals of Australia are pretty much probably the original people of the whole planet. And this kind of information is being squashed, but nevertheless, I don't know how they communicate, but the one image of the Yowie on the bench, the famous, and you know, the logging image where you see the Yowie. The one thing I found interesting about Australia and the Pacific Northwest, because I'm kind of going off on a tangent here because a lot of ideas are coming up for me right now. But what I found most fascinating is in all my research, these beings seem to be different, actually. You know, what is qualified, like the Yeti is not the Sasquatch of the Pacific Northwest. The morphology is different. The stories are different. Yes, it's this relic being or whatever, this being that they're hominid-like being. But even in Russia, the Yaren.
Yeah, the Yaren.
Yalmas and the Yaren.
Yeah.
They all have different physicalities. But what's really interesting is the Sasquatch of the Pacific Northwest really looks like the Yowie. That is really bizarre to me. Nevertheless, I don't know how they're communicating. I mean, there's also, you know, the kahunas in Hawaii, you know, they use lava tubes. They said openly that the kahunas could travel all the way to the mainland in lava tubes, you know? And so I don't really know. I know that the ones I dealt with were different. I never really got the one at my home. I never got, for better or worse, like an ID on, like an ID, like I could, I knew. It was very, very elusive. It's really interesting. I know stuff was going on, but it was, and I know where he came from too, or I didn't even get a feel for a he or a she. The one thing I did get, it was big. It was big. One night I had this thing happen, James, you know, and I know people will talk about this too, and Randy does too, and I don't know. I would get gifts of animals. And that's a very hard one to take. Randy Brisson came out of our campsite one time and he had deer parts hung in all the trees around him, but they were gifts.
A friend of mine was gifted mice in Arizona.
Well, one night, so I'm sitting at my desk, everything's quiet. My area is so peaceful. And I was writing, I had some low music on, and right outside my window, I heard this noise. And I knew it was bad. I knew it was death. It wasn't a screech. It was like the air came out of something, like something had popped the balloon, but instead of going pop, it went pop, shh, right outside my window. And I knew whatever it was. I was like, that was not good, but I wasn't going outside to figure out what happened. The next morning I got out and there was a rat. There was a big old rat right outside my window, and it had this one little hole in its side, and that was it. I couldn't tell what killed it. I knew it was a gift, but again, when you get the gift of a dead animal, it's very kind of hard to take. It just is. I've had entrails left on my front porch. I had that rat left, and then I did have a deer left in my backyard, and the deer would coincide with the cow mutilations, right? The deer had its cavity in a perfect circle. Everything was out of it, out of its stomach, in a perfect circle. Those kinds of gifts are hard to take, but I never really got, like I said, an ID on it. I didn't really feel like it was the one from Montana. The one from Montana has a very specific energy. I want to go back to it. I don't feel like it specifically followed me home, but the phenomena did, right? Canada, very specific for being troop. The very first one I met, the second one was led by a female, and there was about 11 in their group. How I know these things, I can't really relate to you. It's maybe that thing you're talking about. They speak to us in a different way. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're nearing the end of the first segment. It's been a fascinating segment. Thank you so much for sharing, Sonia. Uh-huh. In the next segment, if you feel so inclined, I'd like you to talk about the interactions in Canada with the group that Mike Patterson interacts with, because that takes it to a whole nother level. I mean, you've already described things that take it to another level, but what Mike has been experiencing and what you validated also in your research going over there, in spite of the interference from all these Bigfoot research organizations, let's say, that want to keep everything.
I'd be happy to talk about it. I'll just put this out right now. All the people that talk Mike, they're just wrong. You just got to, yes. You know, I personally have, I didn't experience what I think was quote Neff. You know, I didn't get that. I personally didn't get that feel for it, but he definitely has interaction. I mean, we had interaction right away. So yeah. And big interaction too, but we can talk about that.
Well, we reached the end of a fascinating segment with Sonia Zohar. Sonia, excuse me, they've been having all these fires in Australia, and it's affected the asthma, you know. Makes it difficult to talk sometimes. Oh, it's quite all right. We've had such smoke, palls of it, just lying low in the atmosphere here. Nothing to laugh about. But anyhow, is there a way for people to contact you, or do you have a Facebook or a website that you'd like to share?
You know, thank you so much for that. And I really don't, and I will. I know a lot of people want to talk to me, and I it's not that I'm trying to hide. It just has to do with that thing that people really attack you about this information. Yes. And so I fly pretty low. I do my research. I do everything. I talk to people. I do conferences, but websites and whatnot. I just, even on the BFRO channel, you know, I had death threats in the comments.
This is supposed to be a research organization about Bigfoot, folks. BFRO, I've heard about them years now. They're just, understandable. And the fact that you can do all this stuff, be in the forefront in the field, but still slide under the radar, speaks volumes about you as an investigator and as an individual. Well, we've reached the end of a fascinating segment with Sonia Zohar. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do here at the Cosmic Switchboard Show, please go to our website, thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.